B-Pod Studios.
Happy to be joined on the line by former TNA Impact champion, former Ring of Honor champion, a Triple Crown winner, a champion from all across the globe, really. Eddie Edwards, Boston guy, local guy, good friend, big Celtics fan. Eddie Edwards, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm just great. Have you gotten into any social media wars lately?
I do my best to stay out of that. I just like to sit back and eat my popcorn and see what's going on. And half the time, I don't even know what's going on. And people ask me questions, and I'm like, wait, what happened? Huh? So that's pretty much where I am.
It's funny because I always thought that social media wars were like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when we were trying to figure out what Twitter was and all that stuff. But, you know, social media wars are fine. Of course, Eddie Edwards you can find on Impact, which is every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Pursuit Channel, Twitch.tv, FightNet. There's a fancy Impact app, and Slammiversary is coming up, Impact pay-per-view Slammiversary on July 7th. And Eddie, I don't think we have an opponent for you yet, but I think that's coming.
I got my sights set on somebody that the man that goes by the name of Killer Cross. So he's in my crosshairs, and I think we're on a what you would call a collision course, as they would call it.
Collision courses are always fun. A little bit about your background, and I'm wondering, you're a former Impact champion. For you, what was that like the night that you beat Lashley? How did you find out about it? Just the story behind the story of you becoming the Impact champion.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of a last minute day of, you know, that I was facing Lashley and that I'd be coming out on top in the match. And, you know, at that point, it wasn't something that, you know, I saw coming. I think that was kind of the beauty of it for myself and for the fans. It was kind of, you know, it was a surprise thing, which was very similar to my, you know, winning the ROH championship against Roderick Strong. You know, a couple of big wins that I don't think anybody saw coming. So Dave Lagana was the one who was behind it all, well, behind most of it, I'd say. And, you know, he let me know what was going on. And, you know, anytime you're in there with somebody the caliber of Bobby Lashley, you know, he's a proven world champion, just a freak of nature, a, you know, unbelievable athlete. So to be able to be in there with him and, you know, a guy that I've always enjoyed, you know, wrestling with him, and, you know, I always thought that he brought the best out of me. So to be able to go in there with him and, you know, and be able to beat somebody like Bobby Lashley and hold that, you know, TNA Impact Championship over my head, it was, you know, it sounds cliche at this point, but it was a dream come true. That's why we get into the wrestling business. We want to be on top. We want to be that guy that's synonymous with the company. I want to be the one on top of Impact Wrestling, and having that world championship was, you know, proving to myself, it was proving, you know, to the world that, you know what, I can be that guy. And to have the company put that kind of steam behind me, it felt good. It was a pretty surreal moment when it happened.
It's one of my favorite pictures that I have on my office wall is the one that you autographed for me in Orlando with you and the TNA championship. And it says, "To Jay Stu, go Celtics." It's one of my, because I admit my bias to the Boston guys, and you're one of them who have been overly nice to me in our interactions. And so, like, when you won the world title over Bobby Lashley, it was one of those moments where I jumped out of my office seat because I'm excited for you personally and excited for you professionally because it's a landmark moment.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and obviously I appreciate that. And you know, if it was flipped and I was watching somebody, you know, like me going up against Bobby Lashley, and that's something that I can get behind too. It's, you know, it was the underdog story, and I'm just happy that I got to fulfill my destiny as the world champion.
And Lashley's doing other things now, but how is he? Because he's somebody who's gotten into MMA, and you'd think that he'd just get in there and just destroy you. But is he somebody who I don't want to call easy to work with? Because
they, you know, Bobby, he's one of the nicest guys there is, you know, outside the ring. And, you know, he is a guy that, like I said, I enjoy, you know, working with him. I enjoy wrestling him because, we have a lot of give and take. And I feel that we both, I don't know, I feel like just being in there with him, that right there is the, you know, David versus Goliath right there, you know. So that story is built in. So, you know, it doesn't take much to get more of a story going because you have that leading into it. And the good thing about Bobby is, because he is a very, very nice guy, because, like you said, if he wanted to, he could gladly and easily dispose of me and anybody else. So I'm lucky that I think he did like me and does like me. So, because if not, things could have gone a lot differently. But no, he's a guy that I've enjoyed every time I've gotten in there with them. You know, we got to do a 30-minute Ironman match when I was the world champion against him. And I remember getting in the back and just being like, well, we could have done that, you know, an hour. We could have done 2 hours. Like, that half an hour for me, for myself, it flew by. And that's just a sign of a true professional, somebody that you truly enjoy working when the time, you know, 30 minutes just goes by in a flash. And I came back like, well, we should have just kept going. You know, that's how it is getting there with Bobby, a true pro.
Were you involved in those 60 to 90 minute matches in Ring of Honor? Wasn't there like a 90 minute match with Brian or you or somebody in Ring of Honor?
We did an 8-man. I was part of an 8-man in North Carolina, I believe it was, and we broke the record for the longest match at the time. You know, it was an 8-man, so it was like doing a singles match one-on-one, but that was the longest one I had done in Ring of Honor. Joe and Brian had done, Joe and Punk, and those guys had done a couple of different 60-minute draws in 90 minutes. And I did, however, pitch myself. I did want to do a 60-minute draw in Ohio at the site of where Joe and Punk did it, but I was denied the opportunity.
somebody who I think you have a lot of stories about is Kevin Steen, and I bring this up because I saw a tweet, and I think if now memory recalls, Kevin Owens, Kevin Steen, said in a Sports Illustrated article that you were the most talented wrestler not on his roster.
Well, Kevin's a very nice guy. Now, you know, I got lucky because when me, you know, when myself and Davey as the American Wolves and Ring of Honor, we started, you know, when we started getting going, really getting some steam, we got to wrestle, you know, El Generico and Kevin Steen. You know, Kevin was now Kevin Owens, and the El Generico guy, I think he went back to Mexico to help charities or something. I don't know what that story is. But, you know, Kevin is, he has a great mind for professional wrestling. And he's also, like, one of the nicest, you know, I said this about Lashley, and, you know, I feel like I'm lucky. I've come across a lot of nice people in the world of professional wrestling. But Kevin is, you know, a great guy, a very sincere guy outside the ring who has done a lot to help, you know, the world of professional wrestling, but he does a lot to help, you know, guys who are his friends, and he goes above and beyond the call of duty in that respect. And we got to have a lot of matches together. And, you know, if it wasn't for him and Generico, the Wolves, we wouldn't have been what we were at the time. So I've always enjoyed going to battle with him. And he's also a guy that I enjoy traveling with because he's just an easygoing guy, which I am as well. So it's always fun and easy to travel and hang out with guys like that. We just kind of got along from the start.
So to bring this back to Impact, you were involved. Well, I don't think this was your doing, but Sami Callihan swung a bat really hard at your head, and you ended up in the hospital.
Yeah, he did.
and so, like, I had seen that happen on Twitter, and the first thing I did was I shot you a text, and you're like, yeah, I'm fine. And then you tweeted that you were just watching the Patriots game and the Celtics game, no problems at all. So what happened? Take me through your account of being hit in the head with a baseball bat.
You know, it was a freak accident. And of course, these things happen in the, you know, everywhere in the world, but especially in the world of wrestling, things can't always be perfect. So you know, I'm laying on the mat and Sammy puts a chair, you know, over my chest and I goes to swing a bat and the chair goes kind of tip and he, you know, he tried to go for it, you know, before the chair completely fell over, but the chair shifted just a bit and, you know, I tried to grab it, but it was a little bit too late and, you know, he clipped the end of the chair, but then it can just continued on into my face, more so into my eyeball. And it was, you know, people ask how, you know, how painful it was or whatever, but it wasn't a painful thing at all. It was a shock. You know, it was the shock of it all. It was just all of a sudden I just feel myself, you know, that metal bat, ding, that sound like as if you're in a softball game, just going off my head. And my fear was that my eye, you know, was destroyed or my eye was going to be rolling around in the ring somewhere. So, you know, I get hit by it. It's just like that sends shockwaves through my whole body. And I just kind of roll out of the ring, start walking up the ramp and I'm holding my eye. I see the blood, you know, dripping down my hand. And as I take my hand away from my face, I'm worried that my eye is going to follow behind as I take my hand down. But luckily, you know, I take my hand off, there's blood all over the place, but my eye was, you know, blurry at the time, but my eye was still intact, which was my first fear. And then I, you know, went to the back, get checked out, and ended up going to the hospital that night. And I was watching the Patriots in the hospital bed with blood dripping all over my face. But so, you know, a typical night in Boston sometimes. So, you know, it's not too bad.
And you're just like, yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. Okay. No problem.
Well, it was, you know, that thing where it could have been so much worse. So when, you know, I ended up having a broken orbital bone and broke my nose, but I didn't need surgery. My eyesight was good. If things turned out differently, if I had permanent eye damage or something like that, then I probably wouldn't have been so cheerful about it. But considering how it could have gone and how wrong it went and how much more wrong it could have gone, I got up lucky. And, you know, I consider myself very lucky for being able to get out of the hospital that night with, you know, no major injuries.
Was that kind of a moment where it changed your style? Not necessarily because you got hit in the head with a baseball bat, but where you went from wearing tights to jeans and doing more of a hardcore style because of that? Or was that design? You know, not necessarily getting hit in the head was going to change your style, but was that kind of the turning point in how you go about a wrestling match now?
Yeah, for sure. Especially at that time, you know, I don't know where I would have been or where the storyline exactly was going to be going. But you know, after a guy hits you in the face with a baseball bat, it's hard to go in there and try to exchange hammer locks and top wrist locks. You know, that's at that point, that switch has to happen. You have to hit that switch and, you know, you go to the next level. And it was kind of like, you know, as awful or crappy as that situation was, it was like, well, this is a situation where you got to turn these lemons into lemonade. And that's what we did. You know, we had this opportunity. It would have been foolish to not try to run with it. You know, it was this big story at the time when the episode aired and, you know, we had a lot of feedback, you know, both positive, both negative, you know, and I was on TV, you know, interviewed by TMZ and, you know, all these other interviews that we're doing. So it was a unique opportunity where it was like, well, you know what, we better run with this because if not, it's going to be all for naught. So I'd rather make the most out of getting hit in the face with a baseball bat as opposed to just letting it, you know, fall by the wayside. And, you know, I think because it was such a real moment and people saw it happen, obviously, people could not necessarily relate, but they can relate to, you know, something so extreme and something so violent happening. They understood why I came back as this different person, as this crazed person, you know, going after Sami Callihan. I remember, you know, we did a 6-man pay-per-view, redemption pay-per-view, and it's to the point where I have Sami, you know, taped up against the rope, and I'm beating a defenseless man with a kendo stick. And the crowd was cheering for me. At that point, you know, I knew, okay, this, you know, we got something here because people can relate to it. People can relate to this. People are behind this. They want me to beat a defenseless man who's bloodied and beaten and just keep hitting him with a kendo stick. So I knew right there that we had something. And, you know, I've been happy with the direction my career and my character has gone since then because, you know, I've been able to do some a lot of different stuff, a lot of unique things, and try to push myself not only in the ring but outside the ring creatively.
Is it weird that you've worked with somebody who was playing with Tom Brady in Moose, being a Boston guy and a Patriots fan?
You know, of course. And at first, it was like, I just want to know about Tom. Just tell me about Tom. Can you just tell me about Tom? Come on, tell me about Tom. Just tell me about Tom. And, you know, now, you know, Moose is one of my best friends in wrestling and inside and out of the wrestling. He's one of my good friends. So it's fun. Sometimes it doesn't even cross my mind again until, like, it comes up. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, and then I'll ask him another question or, like, hey, what was training camp like? You know what I mean? Like, I get to kind of be the quote unquote mark for football, and he doesn't, you know, it's like he's not even bothered by it. He's like, whatever, you know, it doesn't even faze him anymore.
So now we'll get to the good stuff. This is the transition. This is really why you're doing the podcast. Give me your thoughts on the Boston Celtics right now.
Interesting for the wrong reasons, I think. I don't know. I think that me and you are on the same page with, I think, a lot of Bostonians with Kyrie Irving. You know, he managed to talk and play his way out of the hearts of all of us here.
I have never seen a player go from one of the most, like, oh my God, we got one of, if not the best closers in NBA history. Yeah. He won Cleveland a championship, and he's ours. And, well, he got hurt, but you know what? The Celtics got to game 7 of the conference final, so now we're going to add a healthy Hayward and a healthy Irving, and they should have won the championship on paper. And then the season happened,
What a mess. And, like, you know, we had texted and talked back and forth, and it's just like, and they, okay, you know, Kyrie, he says that line, you know, it's just the regular season. Regular season doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to play.
Eddie, it started before that. It started before that when he's calling out saying we need a 13, 14 year vet. Hello, Al Horford. Yeah. Al Horford's sitting in your room. And I know that, well, I shouldn't say I know. It's been told to me that he said that to Horford within that realm directly. And then he goes public with it. And it's like you're doomed from there.
You're doomed, and then, you know, you talk about, you know, waiting for the playoffs. I'm like, okay. And then you have a few good games in the playoffs, and then you completely drop off. At that point, you're done. You can't say anything else. You're done. Especially for Boston. You're done. If you don't deliver, you know, that's it. You can say whatever you want, you know, in the locker room, outside the locker room. If you deliver, we can put up with it. But as soon as you don't, no, you're gone. That's it. And it's just such a shame to see, you know, like you said, such a shame for how the season went and what it could have been and what it could have been the year before. It's just these missed opportunities, and it's just frustrating because now it's like, well, okay, you can either try to rebuild from the bottom or blow the team. It's like, what are you going to do? We're going to be the Atlanta Hawks for the past however many years. We make it to the playoffs and get bounced in the first, second round. It's like, that's not what the Celtics are, and that's not what the Celtics should be. It's depressing is what it is.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Well, I think that the thing that – well, so first of all, it should be me, you, Taven, and probably some fourth member, maybe Mark Sherman or somebody like that, who should have been at an NBA Finals together as a collective group, right?
Yes.
And that
yes.
didn't happen, yes. Which is upsetting. So so now you get a situation – yeah, go ahead.
And then, you know, and then Anthony Davis going to the friggin' Lakers and LeBron. It's just like,
this is what I will tell you is that whether they get Kemba Walker or not, I think they're going to start by being likable again. Because I don't know. Because I was so frustrated watching this team because I had such high expectations, high hopes for them. And they constantly disappointed me. And the one time where that Bucks game where they had the wall against Giannis, game 1 of the playoffs, I'm like, this is the team. They're ready to go. They're going to win the title. And then they just laid four eggs in a row. And it was disgusting.
They were so, that was how this season went. It was so up. They had such highs, like, oh, okay. Every time they had a blowout, a great win, it's like, all right, here we go. This is it. And then a couple of days later, womp, womp, womp. And then it was like over and over and over again. It was like, God, how many times are you guys going to do this to me? Like you said, you hit on the head. They weren't a likable team. They went from this team who was so likable and playing hard and like, you know, this and that. And then it's just like, all right, now you guys, it's just hard to, I want to be able to like you guys. Don't do this to me. And I think a lot of it came from the negativity of a Kyrie Irving and stuff going on, obviously, behind the scenes.
Could you tell, like, when did you think that Kyrie was gone?
I mean, it was all depending on how the end of the season turned out. And because it turned out so negatively, I'm sure he was gone before that, but as soon as it ended and like he just didn't show up for the remainder of the playoffs, it was like, okay. And it wasn't even like, I don't even know if that's when it clicked, like, okay, he's gone. That's when I was like, I'm okay if he's gone. Which is not how you want to feel about a guy who's supposed to be your best player. Like, I'm okay if he leaves. That's not a good thing.
No, you know? It's not. It's an upsetting thing. But now Kyrie's killed two teams. He's probably going to kill the Brooklyn Nets, which is fine. But
that's fine.
But Nets, buyer beware.
yeah.
So what do you think of Kemba Walker? That seems to be the hot name, and I strongly believe that the Celtics are prioritizing a point guard to get, whether it be through free agency or trade. I know that they want Kemba. It's a matter of Kemba wants them, which I think he does. I think it's 6:00. Here's a prediction. At 6:01 on Sunday night when free agency opens, you're going to hear the Celtics and Kemba Walker have agreed to a deal. That's what I think is going to happen.
And that's something that I'd definitely be okay with. You know, I haven't studied Kemba as closely as, you know, as you have, I'm sure, as closely as other guys have. But, you know, from what I've seen, obviously, the way he's played in the past, and I'd welcome him. And is that the move that we need to make? No, but it's a start. You know, it's a start. And I'd like to see what else we can do and what we can do from there.
What I would tell you is Kemba is a speedy point guard. He's similar to Isaiah Thomas in his quickness, his ability to get a shot off. He's a better defender than IT is. He's definitely a leader. He will definitely fill the Al Horford adult in the room quota.
Yeah.
Him and Tatum are doing the Michael Jordan business tour right now. And I think Hayward and Walker are close because Hayward signed an offer sheet with Charlotte when he was available to, and Kemba was part of that team. So I think that they have a thing. And also Kemba Walker was on UConn when Hayward was with Butler and they lost the national championship game. So there are all sorts of these little ties. And don't be surprised if like Al Jefferson kind of sneaks in with like a veteran minimum contract, because Kemba and Al Jefferson are friends.
I would welcome all of that. I would indeed. And it's funny, you know, it's funny because you bring up Isaiah Thomas, like, to go from a guy who was playing his absolute heart out, playing, you know, through all the, you know, the awful things that happened through, you know, with his family and stuff like that. He's playing his heart out and dropping these dimes and just playing for the city and loving the city of Boston. You go from that, and then you go to Kyrie Irving, and it was just like, it's just so disappointing. Again, like, why couldn't you put that mentality of an Isaiah Thomas into the athletic ability, the pure ability that is Kyrie Irving? You know, imagine that.
God. It's because Kyrie Irving is more worried about the government and what that word government means to you.
Oh, God.
But I think we're going to like the team this year. They're going to do like some bigs by committee thing, and I think it'll be a much more likable product. You'll want to go to games as opposed to going to a game against the Phoenix Suns wearing a Matt Taven hat and being like, they just lost the freaking Suns? Are you kidding me?
Good. Well, good. That would be a nice change of pace. To actually want to go to the game and actually enjoy it and maybe see a win.
Like, I remember hanging out after the game and we're all like, this was the game that it was the Suns. It was the Suns, right?
Yeah, it was.
It was the Suns. They lost the game, and we're all thinking this is a game nobody's going to want to go to. This is a game that should be an easy win. This will be a fun easy night win at the Garden, and it was miserable. It was absolute misery.
Like, yeah, you go into it, it's like, all right, this is one of those stress-free games. Like, oh, we're gonna have a good time, have some drinks, hang out, no stress. We'll just watch a big win. And then it's like, what happened? Again, what just happened? What are we watching?
On the positive side, at least Devin Booker didn't drop 70 on him that time.
Luckily, so far, that's only one time. I mean, one time's not bad. Jeez.
But I think the Celtics are going to be more of a hardworking culture team, and we'll like them. And maybe they only make it to the second round, but, you know, it's step one of a, you know, multi-step process. And
yeah.
You know, we'll see where they go, but I think we're going to like the team this year.
I can do. That's something I can deal with. A team that's, you know, overachieving as opposed to greatly, greatly underachieving.
Eddie Edwards, you can see on the Pursuit Channel, Twitch, Fight.net, Fight.net, the Impact app. He's on pay-per-view Slammiversary July 7th. He is a local guy. You should support your local wrestlers like Eddie Edwards. Eddie, thank you so much for taking a few minutes here and, you know, us just shooting the breeze for a few.
I appreciate it, man. And I always enjoy talking wrestling, talking Celtics with you. So anytime, my friend.
Safe travels. And we will talk soon, sir.
Thanks, brother. Take care.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.